The Coworker, written by Freda McFadden, narrated by Allison Krawchuk. Copyright 2023, Freda McFadden. Prologue. One day earlier. To Seth Hoffman. From Don Schiff. Subject: important. To Seth. A sensitive matter has come to my attention that I must discuss with you urgently. I would like to request a scheduled meeting with you in your office at your earliest convenience. Sincerely, Don Schiff. To Don Schiff, from Seth Hoffman. Subject, re, important.
Okay, sure, come by my office.
To Seth Hoffman, from Don Schiff. Subject, re, important.
To Seth, I would prefer to have a scheduled appointment to ensure that you will be present at the time of the meeting and that we have adequate time to discuss some potentially upsetting information that I feel compelled to share with you. I do not wish to have an in-depth discussion interrupted by a prior commitment, or worse, arrive at your office only to find you are not there at all. I would feel much more comfortable with a scheduled appointment. I can check your calendar and cross-reference it with my own and come up with 6 potential appointment times in the next 48 hours when it would be convenient for both of us to meet. And you can highlight 2 of those times that work best for you, and we can agree on a final time that is mutually convenient. Sincerely, Don Schiff.
To Don Schiff, from Seth Hoffman. Subject, re, important.
How's tomorrow at 2?
To Seth Hoffman, from Don Schiff. Subject, re, important.
Here are the details for our scheduled meeting. Location, Seth Hoffman's office. Time, 2 p.m. I have added it to my calendar. Sincerely, Don Schiff.
Part 1, Chapter 1, Present Day. Natalie. Dawn isn't at her desk this morning when I walk into the office, which means the world is coming to an end. I'm joking. Obviously, the world is not coming to an end, but if you knew Dawn, you would get it. For the last 9 months, Dawn Schiff has occupied the cubicle next to mine at Vixt, the nutritional supplement company where we both work. You could set your watch by her routines. 8:45, she's at her desk. 10:15, she takes a bathroom break. 11:45, she goes to the break room and has her lunch. 2:30 is another bathroom break. And at 5 o'clock sharp, she shuts down her computer and leaves for the day. If there was some sort of apocalyptic event in which all timepieces in the world were lost, we could all get back on schedule just by watching when Dawn went to the bathroom. Down to the second. I usually arrive at work somewhere in the 30-minute window between 8:30 and 9. Well, 9-ish. If all the stars align, I make it by 8:30. But even though I swear I put my keys in the exact same place every day, on the table, right by the front door, sometimes during the night, they get up and walk away somewhere. And then I have to look for them. Or else I hit traffic. So much traffic. Dorchester Avenue is a parking lot during rush hour. This morning, the lights were not in my favor, but the traffic was sparse, so at 9:10, I step into the large office space that houses Vixt. I walk through the rows of identical cubicles stuffed into the center of the room, my red heels clicking against the linoleum floor, the fluorescent lights flickering above my head. As I pass by Dawn's cubicle on the way to my own, my hand already raised in greeting, I stop short. The cubicle is empty. As strange as Dawn's schedule is, it's even stranger that today she isn't following it. I can't help but think that Dawn's absence must signify something ominous. After all, Dawn is never late. Never.
Natalie! Hey, Nat!
Guess what? I rip my eyes away from Dawn's cubicle at the sound of Kim's voice. She's skipping down the aisle of cubicles, her tan face glowing. Kim Healy is my best friend at work, which sadly means that she's my best friend in general because work has increasingly become my entire life. She got back from her honeymoon 2 weeks ago and has the most spectacular tan as well as highlights in her formerly dark brown hair. She even still smells slightly like sand and sunscreen. She looks fantastic, and I'm so happy for her. And I'm only like 10% jealous. Really, I genuinely wish her all the happiness in the world, as I said in my slightly drunken wedding toast. I rake my eyes over Kim's black and white pattern and tailor dress, noting a telltale bulge. "You're pregnant," I gasp. The smile instantly drops off her face. "No, I'm not pregnant." "Why would you say that?" She tugs at the tie cinched above her waist. "Do you think this dress makes me look fat?"
"No. Oh, Kim, of course not."
In my defense, the way she said, "guess what," really made it sound like she had a baby announcement. Women my age seem to be announcing pregnancies left and right lately. It seems like the only exciting news anyone has to share lately. And she did recently get back from her honeymoon.
"Not at all. I'm so sorry I said that. I just thought..."
Kim is still tugging at her dress self-consciously.
"You must have said that for a reason."
I mentally smack myself on the head.
"I didn't... I swear.
And anyway, everyone puts on a couple of pounds on their honeymoon. It totally suits you." But she isn't even listening. She's too busy straining her neck, trying to look at her own butt. I clear my throat.
So, what did you want to tell me?
"Oh," she manages a tiny smile, her initial enthusiasm dampened.
"The t-shirts came. I put them in the conference room."
"Oh, that is good news." I follow Kim to the conference room, and sure enough, there's a slightly dented brown cardboard box waiting in the corner. I run right over and pry open the flaps.
"Did you look?" "I sifted through. Didn't do a full count."
I rifle through the box stuffed with t-shirts and pull one out. It's teal in color, and all the necessary information is there. 5K charity run, benefiting cerebral palsy research. The shirt in my hand is a medium, and it looks about right. I was nervous about the timing. The t-shirts were supposed to arrive last week, and it's already Tuesday. The charity run I'm organizing is on Saturday.
"They look gorgeous, Nat,"
Kim breathes. She's been such an amazing cheerleader in organizing this run. I couldn't have done it without her.
"We can pass them out later in the morning, when everyone is here."
I nod, relieved this is coming together as planned. "By the way," I add, "do you know if Dawn called out sick?" Kim holds a t-shirt up to her chest, smoothing it out over her abdomen, which still looks a bit like a baby bump to me.
"No, why?"
"Well, she's not here."
"So? She's running late."
"You don't understand." I drop the t-shirts back into the cardboard box. "Dawn is never late. Never. Not once the whole time she's worked here. She's always here at 8:45. Kim looks down at her watch and then back up at me like I've lost my mind.
"So she's 20 minutes late. So what?"
It's strange behavior for Dawn. On top of that, there's something else I haven't shared with Kim. Yesterday afternoon, Dawn sent me an odd email asking if I could talk to her at the end of the workday about a matter of great importance. But I was out on a sales call most of the afternoon, and when I got back to the office, she was already gone. A matter of great importance. I wonder if that was about... No, probably not.
"I hope she's okay."
I shake my head. "Maybe she got into a car accident." Kim snickers.
"Or maybe she was finally committed."
"Stop it," I murmur. "That's mean."
"Come on. She's a weirdo, and you know it as well as anyone. You're the one who has to sit next to her."
"She's not so bad."
"Not so bad?"
Kim bursts out. "It's like sharing the office with a robot. And what's with her obsession with turtles? Like, who is that into turtles?" "Okay, I'm not going to say Dawn isn't a little strange, or even very strange. There are times when people at the company make fun of her behind her back. And yes, she does like turtles
more than any fully grown adult rightfully should. But she's a very nice person. If they got to know her a little better, they would be nicer to her. Not that I know her very well. I always meant to ask her to dinner sometime, but I never got around to it. A couple of weeks ago, as we were riding down in the elevator on Friday evening, I casually asked her if she had any plans, and she looked shocked by the question. Just having dinner at home, alone. I would have asked her to join me for dinner, but I was meeting my boyfriend, and it would have been weird if she tagged along. I'm going to invite her out to dinner, for sure, just as soon as the 5K is over.
Anyway, I better get back to work.
Kim glances down at her watch.
I'm not Miss Saleswoman of the Month like somebody else here.
My cheeks color slightly. My sales are admittedly better than anyone else at the company, but I work my butt off for it.
You got married this month. You have an excuse this time for low sales.
Yeah, yeah. Kim shrugs, because she doesn't really care that much. Her new husband is loaded. At some point in the near future, she'll be pregnant for real, and when that happens, she'll quit and never look back.
Anyway, good luck with the t-shirts. I'll see you later.
After Kim takes off, possibly in the direction of her cubicle, but more likely in the direction of the break room to get her third or fourth cup of coffee of the morning, I close the flaps of the box of the t-shirts and head back to my cubicle. When I get there, I notice something on my desk that I hadn't seen before. It's a turtle figurine. It's small, no longer than the length of my index finger. It's green and blue in color, the geometric patterns on its shell shining in the overhead fluorescent lights. Its head is lifted and its beady black eyes stare up at me. A while back, Don excitedly presented me with a turtle figurine for my cubicle. It was so sweet of her, and I felt terrible when the turtle she bought me toppled to the ground and shattered into a dozen tiny pieces. But that turtle was never replaced, and it was different from this turtle on my desk right now. I pick up the turtle figurine and roll it between my fingers, feeling the smooth surface. What is this turtle doing here? Who put it here? Was it Dawn? But it couldn't be. When I got back to the office yesterday at the end of the day, she was already gone, and she doesn't seem to be here yet. So how could she have put this turtle on my desk? When I rest the turtle back on the desk, there's a stain on my fingers. Something dark red rubbed off on my hand when I picked up the turtle. I stare down at my palm, trying to figure out what I just touched. It can't be paint, since the turtle is green. Ketchup? No, it couldn't be. It's too dark in color and not sticky with sugar. And it doesn't have that sweet smell. It smells almost metallic. What is this stuff? As I'm examining the dark red material that is caked into the grooves of my fingerprints, I'm vaguely aware of a phone ringing nearby, coming from Don's cubicle. I return to Don's cubicle, hovering by the entrance. It's still empty. Is it possible she came in earlier this morning and is in the bathroom or something? She must be here, and she must have been the one who put the little turtle on my desk, even though her jacket isn't hanging on the back of her chair. And her computer screen is dark. No screensaver, just black. The phone on her desk is still ringing. Usually the caller's number flashes on the screen, but it isn't this time. It's a blocked number. I snatch the phone off the hook. It isn't my job to answer her phone, but if she is out sick today, I could at least try to take care of any issues that have come up. I'm sure Dawn would do the same for me. She always tries to help other people, almost to a fault. I wonder what it was she wanted to talk to me about yesterday. A matter of great importance. Coming from Dawn, that can be just about anything from a dirty milk carton in the fridge to a terminal cancer diagnosis. There's no reason to worry. Dawn Schiff's desk, I answer. There is silence on the other line. It almost sounds like ragged breathing. Hello, I say. Is anyone there? More silence. Just when I'm about to hang up, two words are spoken in a tortured female voice that send an icy chill down my spine.
Help me.
And then the line goes dead.
Chapter 2.
I stare at the dead receiver, a sick feeling growing in the pit of my stomach. Help me. It sounded a lot like Dawn, although I can't be absolutely sure from just two words. But whoever it was, they sounded hysterical. Panicked. Help me. And then the dead line, which has now turned into a dial tone. I toyed with the possibility that something was wrong when Dawn was late this morning, but I didn't genuinely believe it was anything serious. Was I wrong? Has something terrible happened to Dawn? Is she in danger? I reach into my purse for my phone. I select Dawn's name from my contacts and click on her number. It rings several times, and then I hear the monotone of her voice. You have reached the cellular phone of Dawn Schiff. I'm not available to answer your call at this time. At the beep, please leave your name, a callback number, an alternate contact number, and your reason for contacting me. I decided against leaving a message. Instead, I shoot off a text message. Hey, Dawn, everything okay? I watch the screen, waiting for the little bubbles to indicate she's typing. They don't appear. I've got to do something. I've got to talk to Seth. Seth Hoffman has been the manager of the Dorchester branch of VIXT since before I started working here. Seth and I have an understanding. He gives me a long rope, and I kick ass at sales. It's nice having a boss who isn't up in my business all the time about every penny I spend on my customers and makes me account for every nanosecond of my time. I'm sure it would be different if I didn't get results. But Seth trusts me. I rap on the door to Seth's office, which is already partially ajar. He does have a secretary, but she's sort of the secretary for everyone, and she doesn't monitor who goes in and comes out of his office. So when he calls out for me to come in, I go on in. When Kim and I started working here, we used to giggle about how cute our boss was. Seth is now in his mid-40s, 15 years my senior. He has lines around his eyes that crinkle when he smiles, a sprinkling of gray hair in his temples that suits him. And while he always wears a tie, it's never quite cinched all the way to his throat. Hey, Nat, he says when he sees me. What's up? Everything okay? Not exactly. I hover in front of Seth's desk, wanting to share my concerns with him, but not wanting to sound too crazy. Did Dawn call out sick today? His dark eyebrows shoot up.
No, she didn't. Why? She's not here?
Like me, Seth must know that Dawn operates like she's controlled by a master clock. I haven't seen her.
Huh,
he says. Damn. I'd been hoping she'd called him, told him she had a sick grandma and she wouldn't be in for the day. I called her and she didn't pick up, and also... He frowns.
Also what?
Dawn's phone was ringing and I picked it up, and the person on the other line said, help me. Seth nods.
Okay, so what did they need help with? Did they need information on one of our products? Was it a customer complaint?
No, you don't understand. It sounded like they were in trouble and needed help. I think it was Dawn.
So she's having car trouble or something? Did she tell you what she needed help with?
No. I squeezed my hands together. She just said, help me, and hung up.
Oh.
The expression on his face betrays a distinct lack of concern. He doesn't look even the slightest bit worried.
Well, just call her back and ask what she needs help with.
I have. She's not picking up. He shrugs.
I'm sure she's fine. What could have happened?
I don't know. I start to bite on my thumbnail, an old bad habit when I'm nervous, but I stop myself. I spent a lot on this French manicure, and the last thing I want to do is wreck it. Maybe she was in an accident.
Let me give her a call.
My shoulders relax slightly as Seth picks up his cell phone off of his desk and scrolls through the numbers. Now that I can see his hands, I notice the wedding band he always wears on his left fourth finger is gone. Recently gone. There's a visible tan line. My eyes stray to the photograph he always keeps on his desk of him and his wife Melinda, but that's gone too.
That's interesting. I'm itching to ask Seth about the missing ring and the picture of his wife, but it's none of my business. He's my boss, after all, and there are more pressing problems at the moment. Seth places the call, and we both wait while it presumably rings on the other line. After a few seconds, I can hear the muted sound of Dawn's voicemail message. Seth drums his fingers against his desk as he waits for her irritatingly long voicemail message to run. "Hey, Dawn," Seth says. "We haven't seen your work today, and I wanted to know what's going on. Is everything okay? Can you give me a call as soon as you can?" He disconnects the call and places his phone down on his desk. "Not picking up, but she'll call back."
"Oh."
"You know what?" He snaps his fingers. "I just remembered. Dawn and I were supposed to have a meeting today at 2. She made a big thing out of how she needed an appointment, and it was so important." "Important?" My stomach flutters, remembering the similar email she sent to me. A matter of great importance. It must have been at least a bit of a big deal if she scheduled a meeting with the boss about it. What was so important?
"No clue. Probably something ridiculous, knowing Dawn."
He cracks what feels like a very inappropriate smile, given the circumstances.
"Anyway, she made such a big deal out of it, so I'm sure she'll show up at 2 to talk to me."
I shift my weight between my bright red Louboutins. I always wear heels, and red is my favorite color for shoes. But these are pinching my toes like crazy. I should have gotten a size 8. "Maybe we should call the police."
"Call the police?" Seth blinks at me. "Are you serious? She's an hour late to work, and you want to call the police?"
"She called, asking for help," I remind him. He blows air out between his pursed lips.
"Are you sure it was even Dawn on the phone? Maybe it was a customer who needed help."
"It wasn't a customer."
"Are you sure?"
I start to say no, but now he's got me questioning my own memory. I pick up the phone, and the other person on the line said, "Help me." And they did sound upset. But then again, some customers do sound upset when they call. Is it possible that it wasn't Dawn calling and it really was just a customer? And maybe they hung up when they heard my voice instead of hers.
"There are 100 things that could have happened to her," he points out. "I don't think we need to call the police. They would laugh at us."
That could be true. Seth's eyes soften.
"Are you okay, Nat? You kind of look frazzled."
"Gee, thanks.
I'm just saying, you've been working your butt off lately. Your sales have been through the roof, and you've been organizing this 5K. I don't even know how you have the time. You should relax a little."
The beginning of a lump forms in my throat. I make time for things that are important.
"I know."
I swallow down the lump.
"You're showing up to run on Saturday, right? I'm counting on you." "I'll be there."
He places a hand on his chest.
"I promise. And don't worry. I bet anything Dawn will be in my office at 2. She's always on time."
As soon as I get out of Seth's office, I return to my cubicle. That turtle figurine is still on my desk, staring up at me with its vacant black eyes. Seth's comment about how I look frazzled is still ringing in my ears, so I pull out my compact. Despite the expensive face cream I smeared over my cheeks this morning, my skin looks sallow. Usually I have great skin. It's one of the things that helps me sell our product. But I didn't sleep well last night, and my blonde hair looks uncharacteristically limp and lifeless. I just can't stop thinking about the phone call. I can't stop hearing the frantic edge in the caller's voice. "Help me." It didn't sound like somebody asking for customer assistance. It sounded like the cries of somebody who is truly in trouble. But Seth is right. I can't call the police to report that my coworker is an hour late to work. I'm sure Dawn will show up to work soon. This is surely all a big misunderstanding. Chapter 3. 9 months earlier. To Mia Hodge. From Dawn Schiff. Subject: Greetings. Dear Mia, today was my first day at my new job that I was telling you about. I wish I could say it was easy, but you know me. You know I'm shy. I have that in common with turtles. They are naturally shy animals. Not to say that they don't have any personality, because they certainly do. But most turtles prefer to stay in their own environment. They don't want to be played with. And when faced with any kind of threat, their first reaction isn't to attack. It's to retract into their shells and hide. Sound familiar? My life would be easier if I had a shell like a turtle does. Remember when you helped me build that shell out of cardboard boxes? I gathered the rocks at the park and we glued them onto the boxes together in my living room. It didn't look real. Of course, we were only 7 years old. But when I was having a bad day, I had a place to hide. How long did that shell last? A week? Two? I just remember coming home one day and it was gone. My mother had dismantled it while I was at school and she threw it in the trash. She ripped it to shreds, so there was no chance of possibly reconstructing it. She said to me, "This is why you only have one friend, Dawn." As if I need another friend besides you. I just wish you didn't live across the entire country right now. The closest thing I currently have to a shell is my round tortoiseshell glasses, which I purchased about a year ago. I don't think you've seen them. Don't worry, they're not made of real tortoiseshells. The company I'm working for is called Vixed. They sell natural vitamin supplements or some such items. I'm sure I'll learn more about it soon, although all I'm doing is accounting, so it's not necessary to know the details of all their operations. I received a 3-inch-thick packet in the mail about the company's products, although it was sadly lacking in data about their efficacy. Perhaps I could suggest some randomized controlled studies along those lines. I'm trying to think of ways to make myself more useful. My new boss, Seth, took me around to meet everyone in the morning. I only met Seth once before today, when he interviewed me. When I met him, I got a good feeling about him. He's 40-something, very friendly in a way that a turtle is definitely not, and he seemed as enthusiastic as he possibly could be about me coming to work as the company's accountant. But today, Seth seemed different. He was more charming the day we met, all smiles and excited about every little thing I had to say. Today he seemed distracted. He rushed me around the office, not giving me a chance to remember anyone's name or do anything more than wave a quick hello. He looked at his watch 5 times while taking me around. Also, when I asked him questions, he didn't seem to know many of the answers. It was rather disappointing. For example, I asked him how often the refrigerator was cleaned. He looked surprised, so I explained to him that many bacteria, such as Listeria, can easily grow at cold temperatures. I had quite a lot of data on it, but when I tried to share this data with Seth, he didn't seem to be interested. He just mumbled something about asking the janitorial staff. Then he said, "Jesus, Dawn." I was beginning to feel like Seth was annoyed at me because that's what my father always used to say when I would do something to annoy him. "Jesus, Dawn." He said it a lot, practically every day. The last stop on our tour was my cubicle. At my last job, I had my own office, although it was tiny and didn't have a window. Still, that was preferable to this tiny cubicle. There isn't anywhere to hide in a cubicle. Also, the chair they provided me didn't look very comfortable. It did not have adequate lumbar support. I'll have to ask Seth about alternate seating options. Seth introduced me to the woman working in the cubicle next to mine. I'm glad he did because I have trouble introducing myself to people. I always feel awkward about it, and then if I wait too long, it's too late. You can't introduce yourself to somebody when you've been working with them for a month. So I was happy that Seth did the introductions. He told me her name is Natalie, and she's our best salesperson.
He told me if there was anything I needed to know, Natalie would be the person to ask. I committed her name to memory. Natalie. 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 She was wearing headphones with a speaker attached, but she pulled it off for the introductions. She even stood up, teetering on a pair of striking red pumps that neither of us would ever even consider wearing. She's about our age, maybe 30, and extremely pretty. The thing I liked best about her was her hair. It was yellow, like the color of corn silk, and it went all the way down to her mid-back. It looked so soft and silky. I almost wanted to reach out and run my fingers through it. Remember when I reached out to touch Becky Doyle's hair and she scratched my face so badly I had a red mark there for months? Now I know better. Instead, I touched my own hair. That wasn't nearly as satisfying. My hair is the same dull brown color it's always been, and these days I've been keeping it cropped close to my head. I'll have to attach a photo. But even if I had long hair, it wouldn't be soft and silky like Natalie's. And the truth is, I don't like the way my hair feels on the back of my neck. It makes my skin crawl, which is why I keep it so short. Natalie gave me a huge hi. Her smile made her look even prettier. She said, "Welcome to Vixt." She had a nice smile, a friendly smile. She also had a very pretty voice. She sounded like she could be a singer or do voiceovers. Natalie seemed like a really sweet person. She was the first person today that didn't make me feel like hiding in my non-existent shell. I could tell from the way Seth was looking at her that he likes her a lot, too. She must be excellent at her job. Natalie gushed about how much I'm going to love working at Vixt, and the more she talked about it, the better I felt. I really like Natalie. In my whole life, you're the only person I've ever clicked with. And believe me, I know I'll never be close to Natalie the way I'm close to you. But it would be nice to have a casual friend to have a cup of coffee with, or have dinner with after work. You always said I should try to make more friends. So I'm trying. I really am. Sincerely, Dawn Schiff. To Dawn Schiff, from Mia Hodge. Subject, greetings. First off, congratulations on your new job. I know making friends is hard, but this Natalie woman seems really nice. Just remember to be yourself, okay? XXO, Mia. Chapter 4, Present Day, Natalie. Natalie, I just want you to know, I love your products. I've got Carmen Salinas on the phone from Happy Healthy, a local wellness store in Quincy. Even though her store is tiny, she's a valuable customer. I do whatever I can to give her discounts on products because full price is hard for her. I'm so glad, I say. Kala Health is the best, Carmen continues. I've been using it myself for the last few weeks, and I swear to God, I look 10 years younger. I know, I say. I think it's an absolute miracle. I wouldn't go a day without using it. Me either. Kala Health is our newest product, which is a capsule containing a special formulation of collagen. I swear this stuff is magic. I barely even have to sell it. It sells itself. Actually, that's not entirely true. I still have to work pretty hard. So you'd like another box then? I ask. Make it two. I scribble down the details for the sale and arrange for another box to be sent to Carmen's store. All the while, the little turtle figurine stares up at me. I rubbed off a little more of that dark red material that was adhering to its surface. If it really was a gift from Dawn, I'm surprised she wouldn't have cleaned it off. She's obsessed with cleanliness. I'm tempted to toss it in the trash bin, but if it was a gift from Dawn, I don't want her to be offended and think I don't like it. Except, I don't like it. It gives me the creeps. And what on earth was that dark red material that stained my fingers? It almost looks like blood. Ugh, I cannot let my imagination run away from me.
There is not a blood-stained turtle figurine on my desk. It's probably just, I don't know, paint that rubbed off from some other figurine that was packed with it. That makes way, way more sense than blood. Still, the turtle is creeping me out. Finally, I nudge the turtle with my pinky over to the corner of my desk and turn it so that it's looking away from me at the wall of my cubicle. There. That's better. It's almost noon, and Dawn still hasn't shown up at work. I've called her two more times, sent yet another text message. I don't know what to do. She mentioned her mother lives out in Beverly, but I don't know how to contact her. Steve in HR probably has the number. I don't know if he's allowed to give it out, but I'm sure I could charm him into handing it over. But am I overreacting? Dawn is a few hours late to work, but there was that urgent email from her yesterday. She was upset enough about something to contact both me and her boss about a matter of great importance. And then that strange phone call. Help me. At the time, I thought she sounded hysterical, but now that several hours have passed, I'm not so sure anymore. Maybe Dawn is fine. Maybe it was just a customer on the phone, and she's got that meeting with Seth at 2, so I'm sure she'll turn up by then. Anyway, I can't think about this right now. I've got a podcast interview in 15 minutes that I've been preparing for all week. After I hang up with Carmen, I grab my personal laptop that I brought with me to work this morning and head for the conference room. Just as I'm exiting my cubicle, I run smack into Caleb McCullough, who was coming to see me. Hey, Nat, lunch? Caleb is his usual slightly rumpled but incredibly cute self. Caleb never wears a tie, and I don't think that white dress shirt has ever seen a hot end of an iron. But it's not like he's in sales and has to deal with people. Seth hired Caleb a few months ago to work on updating our website and setting it up to drive sales through the website itself. He comes to the office a couple days a week and usually works in an empty cubicle. Also, we've been dating for nearly 2 months. I'm kind of busy. I smile apologetically. I've got that podcast interview in 15 minutes. Oh, right. Caleb nods. Good luck with that. You'll be great. He smiles at me when he wishes me good luck. Caleb is just slightly above average in looks, tall and lanky with baggy eyes, but when he smiles, it transforms him. He is movie star level handsome when he smiles. The first time he smiled at me, I was gone. But in the last almost 2 months, I've discovered a lot of other qualities about Caleb that I adore besides his dazzling smile. He's a hard worker, a whiz at computers, funny as hell, and most importantly, he's a good guy. Whatever else you can fake, it's hard to fake being a genuinely kind person. It's also exceedingly rare. Although, what I like best about Caleb is the way he looks at me, like he can't quite believe his luck. I've dated a lot of guys in my life, too many probably, and my last relationship was a complete disaster. They made me seriously worry for my safety. But for the first time in 30 years, I feel like I might have met the one. We've only been together for a short time, but sometimes you don't need long to know. My grandparents dated for only 1 month before getting engaged, and they were married for 60 years. Not that Caleb and I are getting engaged anytime soon. I mean, we haven't even slept together yet. But I could see it happening. I could see myself spending my life with this man. And I'm ready to make that kind of commitment. Caleb is ready, too. His father died when he was young, and it's made him eager to start a family. He told me he's just waiting for the right woman. Hint, hint. So I allow Caleb to pull me closer to him, pressing his lips against mine under the flickering, fluorescent lights. It's an office kiss, but it's enough to make me tingle down to my toes. Sometimes the most chaste kisses are the sexiest ones. I had a great time last night, I murmur. He beams at me. Me too. You have no idea. Caleb came over for dinner last night at my place. I ordered in Chinese food, and then we had a pretty steamy makeout session. But he was a total gentleman and didn't push me to go further or spend the night, which
was pretty classy considering I absolutely would have said yes if he did. Caleb is respectful. It's another rare quality. Even though I was a little sad when he went home at only 9:30. "Hey," I say to him, "you haven't seen Dawn today, have you?"
"Who?"
"The woman in the cubicle next to mine." He's still looking at me blankly, so I add, "The one with the really short hair, like a military cut? Really into turtles?"
"Oh,"
he snaps his fingers. Everybody knows about Dawn and her turtles.
"Right.
No, I haven't."
"Why?"
I consider telling him about Dawn being late this morning and the strange phone call, but I'm trying to show him my best side at this point in our relationship, and I don't want him to think I'm a worrywart. Plus, I'm going to be late for my podcast interview.
"Nothing," I say. "Never mind."
He reaches for my hand and laces his finger through mine. Then he gives me a squeeze.
"Knock 'em dead, Nat."
"I'll do my best." Before I forget, I reach into the box of t-shirts and pull out an extra large that I earmarked for him. "Here's your t-shirt for Saturday, by the way." I hold it up against his chest to make sure it's the right size. Caleb is tall, but it doesn't look like the shirt will be too short on him. It looks perfect.
"Appreciate it," he says. "I can't wait to run circles around you."
I smack him playfully on the shoulder. "You wish. I've been training."
"And I'm just naturally great at running."
I laugh, and he winks at me as he tugs the t-shirt out of my grip and then returns to his workstation. I truly wish I could go to lunch with him today. I've been feeling strung out all morning after that strange phone call, and it would be nice to go out for a bit and forget my troubles. But I've got to do this interview. It's really important. When I get to the conference room, I take out my compact from my purse and give myself a once-over before starting the interview. I realize it's ridiculous to worry about how I look for a podcast interview, but I always feel more confident when I know that I look good. Sure enough, my lipstick is still intact from this morning, my mascara isn't caked into the corner of my eye, and my skin looks pinker and healthier than this morning. I angle the compact to get a quick look at my hair. My roots are starting to show. For my entire childhood, I had perfect golden blonde hair. Then sometime during my early 20s, it evolved into this washed-out, dirty blonde color. But it's nothing a trip to the salon won't fix. Magda works wonders. I hope I have time to go before the race on Saturday. Just as I'm shoving my compact back into my purse, the call pops up on my laptop. The name flashing on the screen is Sherry Bell. I connect the call and plaster a smile on my face, even though Sherry can't see me. Again, it doesn't matter. When you're smiling, people can hear it in your voice. I always smile during my sales calls. Smile before you dial.
Natalie!
Sherry sounds like she's smiling, too. She has a great voice, very perky, like the girl next door. Are you ready?
So ready, I say.
I've done several podcast interviews in the past, so I feel relatively experienced with them. Usually, I find a quiet place to set up, like the conference room, and I invested in a decent mic so listeners can actually hear me. This is the fifth podcast interview I've done to promote my 5K, so I shouldn't be nervous at all. But something about this entire day is making me edgy. Today we have Natalie Farrell joining us. Sherry's voice pipes up through the speakers. Natalie has organized a 5K run this Saturday to benefit a foundation doing research in cerebral palsy. That's right, Sherry. Now, Natalie, I hear you have quite a few people participating in this charity run. I clear my throat. The key to talking on podcast is not to go on too long. You want it to be a conversation, not a monologue. Yes, that's right. I work at a fabulous company called Vixt, which sells nutritional supplements, and almost all of my coworkers will be running, as well as many people in the community. We've raised a lot of money so far and are still soliciting donations. And this is not the first time you've done this, right?
It's my fifth time,
and we have more people participating this year than any year previously.
Amazing!
Sherry pauses. Now, tell me a little bit about this charity. I hear it's very meaningful to you.
I'm vaguely aware that Sherry has asked me a question, and I need to answer it. But something has distracted me. Before starting the podcast, I put my phone on silent and placed it on the conference table next to my laptop. Now the phone is vibrating with an incoming call. I look down at the screen. The call is from a blocked number. Like this morning. Help me.
Natalie?
Sherry's voice startles me out of my distraction.
Are you okay?
Yes, yes.
Thank God she can edit this prior to the broadcast. I'm desperate to take the call. But I recognize how incredibly rude it would be. So I let it go to voicemail.
Sorry about that. What was your question?
I was just wondering why this charity is so close to your heart. Well, I close my eyes and take a deep breath. I always get choked up during this part, but at least it takes my mind off the mystery phone call. My best friend growing up had cerebral palsy. She struggled with it a lot. Unfortunately, she's no longer with us, so this is in Amelia's honor.
Oh my, I can hear how much you must miss her.
I'm sure she's looking down on you and grateful for what a good friend you were and still continue to be.
Yes, I hope so.
I take another deep breath, struggling to get my composure back. It's hard to talk about Amelia, but she's the reason I'm doing this. That always needs to be said. We spend the next 15 minutes talking more about the charity itself and the details of the run. This Saturday is promising to be a beautiful day, and we're going to have a great showing at Florian Hall, which is the start and the end point of the run. I expect it will go off without a hitch.
Chapter 5. One thing I love about my job is that I'm not stuck in the office all day. I would lose my mind if I had to spend 9 to 5 in that cubicle Monday through Friday. But fortunately, Seth allows me to travel to vitamin and health stores in the greater Boston area, because he knows that the personal touch can help to make sales. Soon after a quick sandwich in the office, I travel to a sales call at a nutritional store in Quincy. Quincy is a commuter town on the transit system's Red Line, largely made up of an eclectic mix of people who want to live near the city, but can't afford to pay the steep Boston housing prices. And it has an amazing Chinatown, where I could seriously eat dinner every single night. There are also a large number of vitamin stores, and by now I have sold products to nearly every single one of them. I like to think of myself as Quincy's official Vixed girl. Today I visited one of the stores I've never made a sale with in the past, but I managed to leave with an order for 3 boxes of our products. And the owner informed me that if they sold well, he would be requesting more. As I climb back into the car with the paperwork for my new orders, I check my phone. There's a text message waiting for me from my mother. Coming to dinner Sunday night? My mother invites me to Sunday night dinner well in advance nearly every weekend. It's a bit of a tradition in our family. She told me once that she, not so secretly, hopes one day I will show up with a serious boyfriend. But unfortunately, I have not yet dated a guy who is worthy of the Sunday night dinner. After all, whoever I bring is going to get grilled like crazy. But for the first time, I consider inviting a guest this Sunday, Caleb. I really feel like he could be the guy. At the very least, he could withstand my mother's incessant questioning, and if I invited him, he would say yes. I type into the phone, "I'm bringing." Before I can type the rest of that sentence, I rethink it. What Caleb and I have is great, but it's still very early. I don't know if I want to subject him to my mother yet. And if things don't work out, I'll never hear the end of it. What happened to that nice Caleb? Why wasn't this one good enough for you? So I revise my text. "I'm bringing salad." Bringing salad is a much smarter choice than bringing Caleb. After all, my mother only cooks greasy, fatty meals. I scroll through the messages on my phone. I checked my voicemails right after my podcast, but the blocked caller didn't leave a message. And now it is nearly 3, and there has still been no word from Dawn.
She's the kind of person who always responds to text messages within 5 seconds. So no response the entire day is extremely strange. I shoot off a quick message to Seth. Did Dawn show up for your meeting at 2? Immediately, those little bubbles appear on the screen. A second later, his response pops up.
No, I guess she forgot.
Dawn? Forget a meeting. That seems highly unlikely. Although now that I think about it, there were a few meetings a bit ago where she showed up just when the meeting was ending and seemed confused when she realized she was an hour late. But that problem resolved itself. And lately, Dawn has been back to her almost scarily prompt self. In fact, if Dawn appeared even a millisecond after the scheduled start time for a meeting, I would faint dead away from shock. And of course, there was her request to meet with me as well about that matter of great importance. And in a very uncharacteristic fashion, she left early and blew me off. And then that phone call this morning. Help me. This is not like her at all. Something is wrong. I know it. Maybe everyone else at the office blew it off, but they didn't hear the way Dawn sounded on that phone call. She's in trouble. It hits me that Dawn lives in Quincy, not so far from here, if I recall correctly. I picked her up once when her car was being repaired. She was going on and on about how she didn't know how she was going to get to work, so I volunteered to chauffeur her back and forth, thinking we might get to know each other better, although it didn't work out that way. She mostly talked about turtles the whole time, even when I tried to press her for details about her life. In any case, the address is still stored somewhere in my brain. She lives at Lake Street? Is that it? No. Lark Street, like the bird. I enter Lark Street into my GPS, and it's a tiny street not far from Quincy Center and my absolute favorite hot pot sushi bar. It's less than 10 minutes away from here. I don't remember her house number, but the street is small enough that if I drive there, I'll probably recognize it. And then I can make sure she's okay. Before I can change my mind, I click on Start in my GPS, and a clipped British female voice instructs me to make a right at the next light. Even though I vaguely know where her house is, I don't dare travel anywhere without my GPS. The streets in the greater Boston area simply don't make sense. In some parts of the country, you can turn 3 corners and be back where you started. Around here, you turn 3 corners and you're hopelessly lost. 7 minutes later, my GPS directs me to make a right turn onto Lark Street. Your destination is on the right. Of course, I don't know what house it is, but if I drive slowly, I should be able to figure it out. It was sort of an off-yellow color with light blue trim, just 1 story high, with a small but well-groomed front yard. The houses on the street are all relatively small, single-family houses. I rent out a townhouse in Dorchester, surprisingly tiny given the steep rent, although it's 2 stories high. Dawn is far enough from the center of town that she probably pays less in rent than I do. When I get about halfway down the street, I hit the brakes. There's a car parked in the driveway that looks exactly like the one I've seen Dawn climb into at the end of the day, a green Honda Civic. It's the color of a turtle. I turn my head to the right, and that's when I see it. The off-yellow house with the blue trim. Dawn's house. I pull over outside her house. There are several windows in the front of the house, and all of them are dark. I don't see Dawn's silhouette in the window or any other indication that she might be home. But I also don't see any broken windows or signs that something terrible has happened. I kill the engine and sit in my car for a moment, debating what to do. Dawn and I aren't exactly best friends, but I get the feeling Dawn doesn't have any real friends. All she's got is her elderly mother, who lives all the way up north of Boston. If something has happened to her, if she's hurt or sick, it could be days before anyone discovers what's wrong. And by then, it could be too late. Help me. Screw it. I'm getting out of the car. I step out of my Hyundai, smoothing out the creases in my cream-colored skirt. Dawn always tells me how much she admires the way I dress.
It's funny because she always dresses in a very understated way. She has very delicate facial features, a button nose, and giant brown eyes that take up half her face, as well as a trim figure. And if she wanted, she could be a knockout. But instead, she dresses in shapeless blouses and slacks that are at least a size too big for her. She keeps her brown hair hacked off about half an inch from her skull, too short to even be called a cute pixie cut. I've offered her some fashion advice, but she never seemed interested. Honestly, if you weren't talking about turtles, it was hard to get Dawn to talk about much at all. My red heels clack against the walkway as I make my way to the front door. I push my thumb against the doorbell, and chimes resonate inside the house. And then I wait. No answer. Not only is nobody answering, but I don't hear anything from inside the house. No footsteps? No vacuum drowning out the sound of the doorbell? Nothing. It's dead silent. I ring the doorbell again. But it's no different the second time. It's obvious that nobody is going to answer the door. I pull my phone out of my purse one more time, double-checking that Dawn never contacted me. She didn't. There's another text from Seth, but that's it. The welcome mat below my feet is an image of two turtles swimming side by side, holding hands. Between their bodies is scrawled the word welcome. I step off the mat and flip it over, hoping there might be a spare key underneath. No luck. I check both ways down the block to see if anyone is watching me. Dawn's neighborhood seems pretty quiet. If something did happen here, there would be zero witnesses. I crane my neck and notice a path along the side of the house. I bet there's a back door. I follow the path, which leads to Dawn's tiny backyard. I can see the back of her house, as well as her screen door. This would probably look suspicious if anyone were watching me, but I don't think anyone is. Anyway, I'm not doing anything wrong. I'm just a concerned coworker. I don't exactly look like a burglar in my short skirt and red pumps. I try the screen door, and it swings open. Then I put my hand on the doorknob to the back door. It feels cold in my palm, but it turns easily. The back door is unlocked. I hesitate as I carefully push the back door open. It was one thing to go to Dawn's house and ring her doorbell. It's another thing entirely to enter her house without her permission. Everyone knows Dawn is a bit strange. What if she's sitting in the living room with a gun? Technically, I'm intruding. She could shoot me, and she would be completely within her rights. Then again, I can't imagine harmless little Dawn Schiff sitting in her living room with a sawed-off shotgun. And I can't shake the sense that she's in trouble. I have to check it out. She might need my help. And it's not like I could call the police. They're not going to come running over here because a grown woman won't open her door. Please don't shoot me, Dawn. Dawn? I call out as I enter her kitchen through the back. Dawn? It's Natalie from work? No answer. Dawn's kitchen is extremely tidy. I'm not surprised exactly, but I wouldn't have been completely shocked to find out that Dawn was some kind of crazy hoarder with dirty dishes and old newspapers stacked up to the ceiling. I have to admit, Kim and I hypothesized about it a couple of times, but this kitchen is pretty normal looking. Could be anyone's kitchen. Well, except for the turtle salt and pepper shakers. The kitchen itself seems normal, but there's something else disturbing about it. There's a bottle of wine on the counter. Red wine, filled about halfway, still uncorked. There's also a wine glass on the counter, with a residue of red liquid at the bottom of the glass. And then there's a second glass, except this one is shattered on the floor. I may not be Dawn's best friend, but I know her well enough to know that she wouldn't leave a bottle of wine uncorked on her kitchen counter. And she definitely wouldn't leave broken glass on the floor. I was right. Something terrible has happened here. I walk slowly across the kitchen. As much as I want to find Dawn and help her, I'm scared that there could be an intruder in the house. Well, another intruder. Whatever happened to Dawn, I don't want it to happen to me as well. I've got to be careful. So that's why when I pass the block of knives on her kitchen counter, I pull one of them out. Better safe than sorry. My fingers are bloodless, wrapped around the handle of the knife. I push open the door to the dark living room, and the first thing that hits me is a strange smell. It's not something rotting or anything like that. It's almost like wet seaweed. Before I can spend another second wondering about the strange smell, I catch sight of the giant tank filled with water. It's a fish tank, illuminated by a glow from within, but I don't see any fish inside. I lower my head to peer into the water. It's a turtle. An ordinary turtle, about the size of my hand, swimming around in this giant tank. Well, it's not so much as sitting perched on a rock, its dark green shell glistening as it stares at me. I've never had any strong feelings towards turtles, one way or the other, but this turtle is unnerving me. I want to snap at it to stop staring. It's rude. Turtles just don't have any manners, apparently. Dawn? I call out again. No answer. Where is she, damn it? Next to the turtle tank, there's a large bookshelf. The room is dark, but I can still make out the contents. I always thought Dawn had a lot of turtles in her cubicle at work, but I was wrong. I didn't know